The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
You're listening to Wrestling to the Max.
Alert, alert, clear all channels.
This is an exclusive.
How you like that?
Gary Vaughn, Sean Garmer, and Paul Leeser.
King of Sports. New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Hello and welcome to the This Wrestling to the Max Extra. We're talking about New Japan's G1 Climax 27, Night 6. Of course, this is a B-block show. Why I could not remember that. But then, I don't know why. But, of course, I'm your host, Sean Garmin, here with me, Mr. Paul Leeser.
Heyo!
So, we had, after a fantastic night of Block A action, and then Block B, of course, delivering probably what could be, if not the best, right up there as one of the two best matches of the entire tournament. Of course, I'm talking about Michael Elgin and Kazuchika Okada. If you still haven't watched that match, you need to go watch that. Pause this, go watch that right now, and then go back and either watch Night 6 or, you know, you can keep listening. Whichever you so desire, but you really need to go watch that. So, we have tag matches before this. Anything of note?
So, nothing big story-wise happening. Makabe and Ibushi had a brawl, as well as Naito and Nagata. Naito seemed really focused on disrespecting Blue Justice, which, of course, will not go well for him tonight, I would assume. And Hiromu just comes out carrying nothing now, and it's incredibly sad. and then all the young lions are great on this show, too. Kitamura and Oka tag up against Ishii and Yoshihashi and put on quite a performance, if I do say so myself. But nothing super earth-shattering or anything like that.
I did see people. It seems like the people that get on about how we say, oh, New Japan is very sports-oriented or whatever, and then they throw up the whole, oh, but here's everybody, like, in the fourth day of mourning that a stuffed cat died. I was like, what? Come on, they're not perfect. They do have a more sports orientation, but sometimes you gotta have things like this. Look, you got a guy that hits somebody with their ass all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's a company, too, that realizes it's starting to attract a very large Western audience, and they're catering to that somewhat, too. So I think that should be very much taken into account, even though we do say this is very much a sports presentation, which it is. I think if you still watch it, you get that. But there's a lot of acts on here that have taken a lot of the Western stuff that they've seen on Excursion or brought with them, in the case of the Gashins.
Exactly. And, you know, speaking of a Western man, Michael Elgin starts us off. The Canadian takes on the strong-arm Satoshi Kojima, and they go on to have a really good match here.
I'm sorry, you said strong-arm, and I immediately started picturing those lawyer commercials here in Dallas.
Oh my god, that guy.
Good old Brian Lockhart.
Yes.
This is all going way over your head.
He's still doing those commercials? Great.
He is. Absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. The films, my favorite ones were the, I don't remember his name, but when he would do the guy with the glasses, like when we were growing up, he was very popular. He would do it in Spanish.
Yeah.
And Brian he had the.
In Spanish. That was him.
Oh, and he this
is awful.
Awful. It's so bad. So I just like, wow, his accent is horrible. But anyway, I'm sure Kojima could probably speak better English than that guy could speak Spanish.
I think I might want Kojima representing me more in the courtroom than I would Lockhart as well.
Yes, because he would certainly intimidate you.
Western
he just.
Theory. If you don't acquit.
Yeah, he would. He'll take that elbow pad off and be like, "This is coming for you right now." If you so, not guilty. This is a terrific back and forth match. I loved Elgin doing the chops in the corner. That was great. Just you don't see that like ever. Somebody do Kojima's chops to him or whatever. So that was a lot of fun. Elgin, of course, doing all his big moves, and Kojima hits a nasty lariat at one point, making you think, "Oh man, he's gonna get this." But right when Kojima goes to go to the top. To set him up for, I'm guessing, like a big brainbuster off there or something. Elgin takes advantage, hits a big sunset bomb, and then the Elgin bomb and gets the win.
Just too much power for Kojima to overcome here. And Elgin happens to get his first win of the tournament here. I loved this match too. Lots of big lariats, lots of big moves. Guys, just... I mean, really going out there and just hitting each other very, very hard, which I feel like is, if you're watching Puro, that's what you want to see. These guys don't skip on that at all. And, the crowd was really into this, too, which was helpful. Elgin coming off that phenomenal match, obviously, and Kojima is just beloved no matter where you go. So,
yeah, and Tenzan was out there with him, too.
Absolutely. So. I think Tenzan's been out there for every match so far, though, hadn't he?
I feel like this is the first time I've seen him. Like he might have been there, but the camera focused on him this time. So
for sure, yeah. I mean, Kojima took a nasty, nasty move on the apron and looked like he died pretty much. And Tenzan and the referee were like, "Oh, he might actually be dead."
Yeah, Tenzan's got that look like, "Oh hey,
oh boy,
like watch out here. We might have to be calling some medical people in." Mm-hmm. Thankfully, he was okay. Of course, this means Elgin gets his first 2 points of the tournament, and Satoshi Kojima, unfortunately, continues with a big goose egg. So, veterans not doing, the older veterans not doing so hot.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people expected, right? There's so much other talent in here that I think they're so focused on that it's not... You know, it's obviously not Nagata's time anymore. It's not really Kojima's anymore, too. But I wager Kojima will get some points eventually. It's just a long line of people who he could possibly beat or further down.
Yeah, certainly for him. He just kind of got into a... You have to factor that Elgin's got to get some points here, especially after what he put on with Okada.
Oh.
He's not getting zeros.
Match is still giving me chills. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Hey, I'm still. I dreamt about it. I think I woke up morning thinking about that match. So, I don't know that we're gonna be thinking too much about this match though. Tama Tonga against Evil, two heels going at it from two different factions. Of course, Tonga from the Bullet Club and Evil from Los Ingobernables de Japón. So, where they tease a countout spot. That, of course, doesn't happen here. We will get one later that we're going to talk about. And a missing the corner, that avalanche splash that sort of Tonga does, running the stinger splash, if that works better for you. Evil sort of starts getting his stuff in, especially the big chair spot. Tonga gets out of the submission. You get some big moves. I love that apparently Tonga needs to do the Superman punch.
Yes. You know. Like, commentary marked for it too. Superman punch!
Like, might as well start mentioning Roman Reigns too. But Evil and Tonga do a bunch of reversals from the gun stun and the Evil, and then eventually Evil puts him away. It was a good match. I didn't think this like hit that second gear or whatever, but still good. And Evil gets, now he's got 4 points.
Yeah, this is a little bit on the shorter end, close to 11 minutes, and I think most of the mid-card stuff has gotten somewhere in that area, 13 to 15 for the most part. So, you know, this was still very good. I especially love the ending stretch whenever they get into all the reversals after everything. I feel like it was starting to pick up and flow, and that's when Evil finally had enough and decided to let Tonga know that everything, of course, is Evil. And, you know, realistically, they're just here playing the hits almost, which is fine. I think it worked out very well for both guys.
Yeah, I agree. It kind of felt like that. Just, I wouldn't want to say going through the motions, but they were just hitting the stuff you'd expect.
Mm-hmm.
Evil's going to win. And, you know, it just seems different from the Tonga we got against Kenny Omega. I guess much different motivations there, obviously, but yeah.
Right.
So, you know, we, like you said, the on the previous show, Minoru Suzuki had worked on Juice Robinson's leg during the tag match, and that comes into play almost immediately here for Minoru Suzuki as, hey, Suzuki-gun, we attack people. That's what we do. Juice doesn't even get to make his entrance, and he's already going after that leg. And mm-hmm. So pretty much he works on the leg for a lot of this match, other than when Juice forces him to stop because he's going for his offense. And he does get some stuff in here. You know, he gets that cannonball and the big suplex and everything. But then Suzuki is able to go right after that knee. The putting the leg into that into the barricade spot.
Mm-hmm.
Was like, if you're thinking about it just from perspective of, man, if your leg is really tore up, that's got to suck badly. I love the Pulp Friction counter into the sleeper by Suzuki. That was some great stuff. And then Suzuki just, he knew he had Juice and, you know, where he wanted him. And he's just like, I'm just going to take my time with this Gotch Pile Driver.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't give a shit. He's going down, so.
I mean, nothing worse about making you think about your impending doom than letting you hang there for a couple seconds and then just spiking him.
Yeah. Just almost like in slow motion. Like.
Yeah. Like, he was ready to murder Juice. That was all this was. Obviously, the attack the night before helped a lot, and he continued to focus on that. This almost read to me like the match with Sonata, where Juice is not necessarily trying to play his game, but he's fighting from underneath, and Suzuki is just too much of a badass, too great, too whatever you want to say. But on this night, he was better, and simply, I think, pretty much dominated for most of the 12 minutes with Juice getting in his hope spots, and that's all this really was. And I think that's fine. I think they want Suzuki to look strong moving forward, obviously, because he's got a lot of bigger opponents down the road still, but I think Juice was still great here, and now he's got a big injury that he can work with going forward, which will be really fun to watch.
Yeah, certainly. I kind of thought maybe Juice would get a lot closer, like maybe pull a surprise and be one of the guys challenging Suzuki or anything, but that fortunately did not come to pass for the man. He already did get an ever title shot, so.
Of course.
You know, weird to see them usually have the same challenger twice, but. Yeah, I mean, this worked, like you said, Suzuki coming in there and just beating guys. Nothing wrong with that.
Mm-mm.
He's got bigger fish to fry.
Right.
And then we get to this match. We knew there was going to be stuff going on. There was quite a bit of stuff going on. You know, if you were watching this live, this certainly woke you up because there, you were confused probably by half of this. So it's Kenny Omega and Toriano. You know, Kenny Omega, of course, used to be in DDT doing comedy matches. Mm-hmm. He did some of this stuff when he was a junior as well. And, of course, this is Yano's right up his alley, right? So, you know, he wanted to give Omega a DVD. And Omega was like, you know, I don't want this, man. And it was Yano's just pulling him so he could do the, I was thinking of Mr. Fuji the whole time, the powder in the face. And, man, it just, he took a whole bunch of that powder in the face. And
he did.
Yano just takes advantage with a low blow and getting the near falls. And then he goes and does all four. He undoes all four buckle pads. And Omega's still sitting there like, oh, my God, I can't see. I can't see. They do a do-si-do in the turnbuckles, literally. Like, it was like they kept turning each other and whatever. And finally, Yano hits the buckle. They try to... Each person grabbed the other's hair to knock the other one down. It's just so stupid. And, you know, Yano tries to tape Omega's, like, ankles and feet to the apron. That doesn't quite work, so then... Or it does, and then Omega tapes Yano's legs together. And so Omega is such a great man that he actually, they do the beginning of a match with Omega's feet taped up. And they do the drop down and Omega jumps over and the crowd actually gets really into this. It's again, so dumb, but the crowd eats it up. And then Chase Owens shows up with scissors to get Omega out of it. Then he Yano can't get the scissors. And eventually, Omega hits V-triggers, and he doesn't actually get to pin Yano. Yano's leg, he fell down, and he can't get up because his feet are still tied. So it's count out for Yano. Well, if there was ever a time to do a count out finish, this is, I don't know, that just capitalized on the... Okay, then. That was a match. Yeah.
This certainly was something. The entertainment is definitely on display here, right? If you're looking for what probably should have happened, and that's Omega running Yano over in about 4 minutes, you're not getting that. 10 minutes, lots of silliness, Red Shoes getting involved, which is always fun.
Red Shoes almost eats a one-wing angel. Could you imagine if that would happen?
What I mean, he's already had a pretty rough tournament too. He's eating a V trigger, like. I thought this was fine for what it was. I see Larry's point over on 401. He gave this a dud because he thought that Omega really should have just squashed Yano and moved on. And to that point, that's fair. I mean, this isn't awful by any stretch of the imagination. I'm sure a lot of people are going to be into this. I kind of see it both ways. Like, it's different, and I think that's what's the point here, because you're going to watch so much wrestling back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back so often during this month that keeping it fresh, keeping different styles in front of you, showing you that they're more than just, you know, guys here to run you over, I think that's important, especially moving as we get further on in the tournament, so... I don't have a problem with this here. I just kind of do wish that maybe they shaved off some time here, as I've been saying with all the Yano matches, because they've all gone 10 minutes, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've given him a lot of time here to go do his shtick, and I wouldn't say it obviously doesn't wear it out its welcome with the crowd. They like it.
They loved it, yeah.
But for the people that are watching this and... You know, you're kind of like, oh, well, I got to watch the rest of these matches, and this thing's kind of here, and, you know, it's... They did do a good job at times of, like, Yano almost got some near falls where, like, oh, my God, could he be the one that beats Omega or something? But no, you know, Omega eventually wins, but just they took a little bit too long to get there.
Yes, I completely agree.
But hey, again, they save us with this main event. We talked about how Sonata could be a guy that takes Okada to a limit. Unfortunately, he is not the one that triggers the upset for Okada. So Okada gets a win. But he, again, just like with the Elgin match, had to work for it. Not as great as the Elgin match, but still a great match in its own right. Sonata really had the upper hand for a large part of it. He is able to just kind of counter a lot of what Okada was doing. Of course, they wrestle similarly. They're the same age. So, you know, lots going on here for both guys. But Sonata was able to just kind of counter a lot of what Okada was doing. And so much so that he made Okada have to think about, man, I'm really going to have to put this guy away. Mm-hmm. And he has to pull out three Rainmakers to put Sonata down.
Sonata just didn't want to go away. I thought that this might have been an upset. I picked Sonata to win here on my predictions, too, which turns out to be wrong because they're telling a very different story than the one I was expecting. And Sonata, I think, looked great here, right? And we know these two, they've had great chemistry in the past. I think they wrestle very similarly. Lots of, you know, they like to mix in a lot of different styles to create what they do, and they end up with something pretty close to each other. So they're both the same age. They're nearly the same height. Like, it's almost wrestling a clone of yourself at times. And I feel like that they produced maybe one of their best matches that they've had together. Certainly, I think they wrestled last year in the G1 too. I felt like this was better than the last time I saw them in the ring together. So I have no problem with this. Sonata looks super strong. It took three Rainmakers. He dominated a lot of the match. I also like that they're keeping up the story of Okada seems to be, you know, dragging and just tiring out as he goes, because these matches are going, all of them really, for him so far in the tournament, except for his first night, have gone over 20 minutes. And the other one was pushing the time limit with Elgin. So I thought this was really, really good. I'd recommend it too. I don't know if this cracks match of the year contention, but it's damn good.
Yeah, certainly, again, a great match in its own right. I kind of agree with Larry in the four-star territory.
Yeah, I think that's right too.
I think Sonata in a way is a little bit smoother than Okada, if you're going to make a slight distinction between the two guys. But, like, just, it's so eerie how similar they are to each other. And I thought that maybe this would be one where, you know, knowing that Sonata uses the Skull's End, that Okada might pull out the red ink, but he didn't. So, you know, but still, I like the just the way that they made Sonata look great here. Again, don't know if this means that he's going to do great in standings or whatever, but I'm happy that he got to look good, and he really had to do a lot to put him down.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I still look for him to do big things, right? I mean, I think Omega and is really the last big hurdle he has in the block, and everybody else he could feasibly beat. Maybe Elgin might be a little rough since I think they meet later in the tournament, and Elgin always gets better the longer this tournament goes. So points wise, at least.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You'd think that, you know, I could see Yano doing a Yano on him or something, but like, you'd think he beats Kojima, beats Tonga. You'd think he beats Juice, but they have a rivalry from the Taguchi Japan thing.
Yep.
So, you know, there's always that. And, yeah, like you said, it'd be surprising to see him beat Omega or anything after he's already lost Suzuki and Okada. So, not a lot of points left out there for him, but you never know. I expected him to win at least one of these big ones, and so far he hasn't.
I mean, they still could do the upset with Omega later on. I doubt, so far, Omega and Okada are both undefeated. They're both 3-0, and they've both always followed each other match-wise. So it feels like they're almost watching each other and like, okay, he won tonight. I really got to go out there and win, or the other way around. And, you know, if they really go undefeated all the way up to the end, then it's almost like, what was the point of doing another block, you know?
Yeah, that's true, though. You're right about that, but these are the two mega powers pretty much at this point. So, yeah. You know, again, they kind of stand tall above almost everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to say that they don't kind of deserve to go undefeated right now. I mean, like, it's difficult to, like, you'd think that Okada would get a challenger out of this, but maybe they say, no, we'll just do it the more traditional way, where somebody just comes out and challenges him, or you know, pulls a Cody and goes to the backstage area and just gets in his face, and they decide to make that the match, and nobody beats him except maybe Omega, and that's it.
All right, that very well could be, because we're running out of people who I think could have feasibly beaten him. He's already done with Elgin, and he's already done with Yano, who could have pulled a Yano. So he's still got Suzuki, and we know Omega's the last night. So unless Evil is somehow going to, you know, pull that out, might be the only other person on here I could see doing it at this moment in time. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd love to see Juice get the one championship shot he hasn't yet.
Yeah, that'd be cool, too.
That'd be so... He did say he's the future, so...
He did. I don't think New Japan sees that just quite yet.
No. Like, I don't know that it's going to happen. I mean, you're getting the G1 match. I think that would be enough for the guys. It's just... Other than Suzuki pulling an upset on him again, you know, or just pulling an upset, period, which I don't think they would. I think they would have him beat Suzuki...
Right.
After Omega beat him, it's really hard to see this ending up any other way but that. But yeah, that's gonna do it here for us talking about the show. The Blocks B standings are currently Okada and Omega at 6 points. You got Minoru Suzuki at 4 with Evil. Also at 4, and then you got a bunch of guys at 2, Juice Robinson, Tama Tonga, Sonata, Toriano, and Michael Elgin all at 2 points, and then Satoshi Kojima sitting there at the bottom with 0 points. Of course, now the Wednesday morning show, which will start in about 3 hours from the time that I am talking, is Block A, and they're in the Sendai Hall Plaza for that one in Miyagi, so that's going to be, tremendous crowd and a really cool sort of arena setup for that as well.
Yeah, it's a beautiful arena if you've never seen this place before. I love the colors bounce off the dome and the Coliseum in just this really cool way.
Did you ever get to look at the card for that? I forgot.
So for tonight, you have Goto and Tanahashi main eventing. Co-main event is Naito and Nagata, which both of those should be tremendous. Oh. Yeah. you got Ibushi and Makabe, Saber and Fale and Ishii and Yoshihashi, which could be a sleeper match of the night as well there, too.
I want to see if Saber Jr. can get Fale in one of his submissions, or Fale just creams him.
The size differential between the two is almost hilarious. So
yeah. It's so...
That'll be interesting. I don't see good things happening for good old ZSJ here.
No, I don't either, but it will be interesting to see him dry. Right. Of course, we'll be back on Thursday night before or after we do our other shows that we do on Thursdays, the NXT review and the WTM Part 2 episode. We'll be doing nights 7 and 8 together. And then Paul's going to go on a little vacation, and Mr. Tom Reese gets to come back to the podcast for the first time in a long while to talk G1. So as much as I'm going to miss Paul, it is going to be nice to have a different sort of perspective. An older gentleman of the New Japan fandom since before we were born. watching the show. That's true. I don't have to say bye to Paul yet, but thank you for listening. If you enjoyed it, let us know in the comment section of either 411, YouTube, W2Net.com, wherever it is you're listening. You hit that subscribe button, and you get all of our content. The other G1 shows that we've done, we covered all the other ones so far. And, you know, until we're here again on Thursday covering nights 7 and 8, we'll see you later, everybody.
Have a good one, guys.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.